KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Good morning. This is Dr. Ann Zink, and you are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. It's an absolutely gorgeous morning down here in South Central Alaska. Got stock coming in by the moose. But before we roll into today's discussion, here are four quick Alaska-specific health notes that I just wanted to put on your radar thinking about public health this month. The first is this is Mental Health Awareness Month. One out of four Alaskans face mental health challenges each year. So if you or someone you know needs to talk, dial 988 anytime or visit the care line for free confidential help. That one I wanted to highlight, it is Bike to Work Day coming up on Friday, May 16th. Eliza, one of our guests here, biked on in today because it's also a 100-mile May challenge where you can join me and thousands of other Alaskans by logging in, walking your activity, and helping to raise money for healthyfuturesalaska.org, which provides support and services to kids who want to be active. And the last thing I want to highlight is it is spring breakup water safety. To those out in Bethel, we watched the tripod fall over yesterday and the clock stopped, but we know breakup is happening fast. So make sure that you are taking precautions for boat and safety, making sure you have a life jacket. So anyway, I like to start each month with just this quick public health update. But now I want to get into our introduction. Most of us think about health information. We think about the chart in a doctor's office, but the 2025 landscape is far bigger. Lab results that pop up on your iPhone, blood pressure readings that beam from a smartwatch, or records that show for your end-of-life care so that they are honored even if you can't speak for yourself. These pieces of data already exist, but too often they sit in silos, and instead of working for patients, providers, for you, they oftentimes lead to higher healthcare costs, putting a burden on a patient to carry all those papers between you and your doctors. And that's where secure data sharing comes in. Done well, it saves lives by preventing medication errors, duplicating testing, lets families ensure loved ones can care for their preferences and make sure that they're followed, and help communities spot outbreaks early on, and help health systems like Medicaid focus more on prevention and moving upstream. It can also save real money. When Washington State's Medicaid program wanted to decrease emergency department costs, they worked with the physicians and ultimately decided to adopt the seven best practices that built an EHR-like system, a system that connected emergency departments. And by doing this, they cut down on low acuity ER visits by 14% and saved over $32 million. Alaska's been building its own digital backbone, initially started with federal dollars via the high-tech funds, and later with guidance from some federal funding from legislators and others. The Alaska statute tasks the Department of Health with operating a statewide privacy-protected health information exchange. Through that exchange, run by eHealth Connect, clinicians and public health teams are working to share information such as reportable labs, syndromic surveillance, and other things from emergency departments and other clinics to make sure that you have the information you need, and so do your providers. But I really want to just dive into who is actually with us today and help us to understand this information. So guiding through this, we have Dr. Kendra Sitka, PhD, Executive Director of eHealth Connect, who spent her career expanding access and quality in frontier health systems, as well as Eliza Ramsey, Public Health Informatics Specialist with the Department of Health and one of the driving forces behind the state's data modernization effort. So, excited to dive in, and also want to encourage Alaskans to give us a call. Feel free to call us and let us know what your questions are about data, where it goes, what you want to see better. Feel free to give us a call at 907-550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So Kendra, welcome. So excited to have you and to see you in person.
Thanks so much. Excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. It's a great day. Can you share just a moment or a patient story that first convinced you that data sharing was important and how that led you or kind of your journey into eHealth Connect?
Yeah, thanks so much. So I think when I started exploring working at Healthy Connect and with the Health Information Exchange, just learning more about the mission, it was lots of stories, right? It was all those times that you fill out the records over and over again, you fill out forms, you say, doesn't somebody already know this about me? So I think it was that really personal that I just, the mission resonated with me. Also loved that we're set up as a nonprofit and we're really there for the state of Alaska and for people in Alaska, which means a lot to me. It's It's not just about a health system. It's about the people of Alaska. But I think probably the most personal story for me, and it happened many years ago, my dad had passed away quite a number of years ago, but he had significant cardiovascular disease. And I often attended his medical appointments with him. And one time we went in for a regularly scheduled cardiology appointment, but he had prior to that, not very long prior to that, been in the hospital with a heart attack, had stents placed, and we went in for the doctor's appointment, and the doctor very nonchalantly said to him, his cardiologist said, "So how's it going? Everything good?" And it was like, I was just, my heart hurt that it was clear he had no idea he had been in the hospital. And those things just shouldn't happen. And now we really have the technology, so they don't. So I think that story really stuck with me. And when I started looking at the Health Information Exchange, it's like, this is what we need to continue to do better so those things don't happen to patients and their families.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your father, but I can so relate to that as a provider also sitting on that end and saying, what happens? Can you also just give, you know, our audience just a really brief description, like if they've never heard of the Healthy Connect or the HIE, like what are you talking about? Like what is this thing and how does it work?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think with data sharing in general, it can just feel very mysterious and where it all goes. So in its very simplest form, the Health Information Exchange is a data repository. So it's a place when you go to the doctor and they sit in their healthcare provider and they sit behind their computer and type all their notes. It goes into their electronic medical system and then their electronic medical record. And then if they're connected to the Health Information Exchange, it also automatically goes into this data repository. That data repository is extremely protected. There's very specific parameters on who can access it, but the value of that is then when you go to someone else that you have chosen to get care from, not just anybody can access it, but you go somewhere else that you've chosen to get care from, you don't have to fill out all the forms to have your records sent. They can access it because you've selected them for care. So that's really very simple. It's just a central kind of thinking of it as like one big mega electronic medical record that has your information, but it's protected to only be seen by the providers and organizations that you are seeking care from.
Okay, that makes sense. I appreciate that. And again, we really encourage callers to ask and to call in. We were just talking before this conversation about how sometimes data and data sharing can feel like this black box that we don't understand or it's not shared. I know as a provider, I get patients all the time who say, I don't know, it's in that thing that you have over there, that computer. And I'm like, this thing here actually doesn't tell me all the things you think it does. And so we really want to make sure Alaskans understand where your data is, where it isn't, where it's shared, because we really want your input as these things are grown and developed. This is really for you. And I think that really gets us to our other guest, Eliza. Eliza, tell us about your journey to Alaska and your journey into health data and what you do now at the state.
Great. Thanks, Anne. Happy to be here. So I trained as an epidemiologist and as a data analyst and was really kind of working on different kind of analysis in public health, thinking about what are the patterns of disease in a population, and kept running into these data walls where, you know, the data quality wasn't there or it was locked in a system that we didn't have access to, and had kind of learned about informatics as this space and this science of thinking about how do we better use data as an organization than also as a system. And so I was really lucky to find this fellowship that focused on public health informatics, which placed me with the Alaska Department of Health. And so came up almost 3 years ago, first to kind of work as this fellowship and now in a permanent role. And while I don't work as much as kind of an analyst today, I get to think as a strategist about like how, you know, as the Department of Health and then how as the whole Alaska health ecosystem, do we best use data to serve the well-being of patients and communities? And our partnership with Healthy Connect Alaska is a huge part of that.
That's amazing. I think sometimes patients, people don't understand, like, what does the state have to even do with this? Like, why is the state involved with the HIE and then data sharing? Isn't that between just me and my provider? Why are you guys involved? What can you see? What can you can't? Can you talk a little bit kind of about some of the statute that might exist there or some of the work that is required by the state to think about health data and why that's important?
There's so many functions of the Department of Health that touch health data. My background is in public health, and so thinking about notifiable conditions, which are kind of this subset of infectious diseases and cancers and birth defects that anytime a provider or a laboratory detects them in the community, they're required to report to us. And then we do investigatory and follow-up work and provide treatment and kind of try and ensure that we understand kind of what caused them and how do we prevent them from spreading in our communities. We also do a bunch of work around vital records and kind of investigations around deaths that occur in the community. We're also a payer. So the Department of Health administers our Medicaid program. And so that means we have a special relationship with ensuring that people who are on Medicaid get the care that they need. And all of those functions and many others require us to have access to and share data with others. And then one of the designated parts, you know, of Alaska law is that it's our responsibility to designate the Health Information Exchange for the state of Alaska. And then help ensure that, like, the parameters that are set out in statute for what that entity is are followed and upheld. And so while it's an independent entity, we can kind of support it. And so that's where I get to collaborate really closely with Kendra to ensure that the HIE is both a tool that can support the Department of Health and its designated functions, but that also, you know, it supports all of kind of Alaska providers and patients and other kind of care coordination entities. And the reality is there's a lot of information in the Health Information Exchange that we don't have the authority or responsibility to access.
You tell us a little bit more about that. Tell us about the statute itself, you know, what it says we can and can't share, why it was created, anything else that you know about it. And then, Kendra, I'm curious to circle back to you about, you know, how you guys implement that and who you have on your board.
So there's kind of, it's a very participatory model in Alaska, and health information exchanges came about kind of out of the Affordable Care Act and the High Tech Act, kind of 2008, 2009, 2010. And then Alaska had its kind of own statute that we set up in 2010 that said, you know, we need to have this thing. And we said, we want to make it opt-in for providers. So providers get to choose that they want to participate. And then we want to make it opt-out for patients. So patients can work with their healthcare provider and say, actually, I don't want my records to be able to flow into this centralized repository. And so it's very much about kind of ensuring that people get to choose whether or not they want to be a part of this kind of this statewide data sharing. And then there are certain purposes that are allowed for the data that is contributed into that repository. And I'll let Kendra talk a little bit about more kind of what some of those specified purposes are. But that's kind of always the question of, like, you know, is this allowed under the rules that we've set forth for the HIE? And then there's also a board that governs the kind of the use and the approach and the strategy of the HIE. One of those seats is held by the commissioner of the Department of Health, but there's also representation from different provider groups, from university groups, from tribal groups, from patient advocacy. And so thinking about how do we all collectively participate in making this a resource that works for all of Alaska.
Fascinating. Kendra, tell us more about how does that actually work?
Yeah, no, that's great. I really appreciate it. And I think it's interesting with the state connection because we are so heavily state supported. And I think of it really as two parts. One, like Eliza described, there's certain public health functions that the state needs to do that's, you know, within their requirements to function in that way. So that's part of it. But the other piece that I think is huge is that the state really supports building this, the HIE, as part of healthcare infrastructure in the state. So I think about other industries, for example, the oil industry, very different industry. The state may designate funding to help support infrastructure that allows, you know, oil companies to operate well here. So with the Health Information Exchange, I think a big part of it is that it's the state supporting infrastructure development so that we can have quality and cost-efficient healthcare in the state. So it's not so much about them having access to everything, but them supporting that infrastructure that allows other systems in our state to develop. Very much like other infrastructure type things that the state supports. In terms of allowable uses, I think that's a really important piece, that it is very regulated. So really, data that exists in the HIE, once your data goes into the HIE, the only thing someone could go there to look at it for is treatment. So providing you treatment, care coordination. So working between, you may be working with, you know, a cardiologist and your primary care doctor and a neurologist. And so coordinating that care together, as Eliza talked about, the public health uses where there's reportable conditions that are required there. And then related to payment in terms of your insurance company that needs specific information to make sure they can pay your claims, those sorts of things, and help manage your care. So that is really the very specific allowable use. So it's not as if once data comes in that it can be used. Something that's expressly prohibited in our state statute is research. So I think that's a really important thing for people to recognize. This is really about patient care and providing efficient and effective and cost-effective patient care. Cost of care is a whole other issue. I know we're not here to talk about today, but I think it's a huge driver when we look at these systems. We all know healthcare costs are very expensive, and we see it, you know, whether it's through our bills to the doctor's office, through our insurance premiums, and I think systems that allow efficient care help reduce that cost of care, which is just really, really critical right now.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you highlighting that. And we actually had Dr. Jean Quinn on, and we were actually talking about cost of care and the importance of kind of sharing of information. You know, if I see someone and they get a CT scan after they had a trauma and I'm transferring them to Providence Hospital and they get a repeat CT scan, that's not very efficient use. And it also exposes them to more radiation, let alone changing medication or coordinating with their primary care. I think that's what was so fascinating about the Washington State 7 best practices is just some little bit of visualization between what was happening between hospitals essentially saved the state $32 million in 1 year. And so we see some really quick cost savings when we're able to have kind of shared information and shared care. So I think sometimes we don't talk about the risk of not sharing. We talk a lot about the risk of sharing. And part of the reason I wanted to have this conversation with Alaskans and with the public as a whole.
Yeah, I think that your comment about the risk of not sharing versus the risk of sharing, I think it's really interesting as I talk to people about the data sharing. And from a provider and healthcare organization perspective, I think there's often, rightfully so, an extremely protective view on data, which is important because you want that data to be safe and protected, but also really talking about what are the risks when we don't share data and the right data isn't in the right place, someone gets a wrong treatment, a wrong medication, or delayed treatment. So I think there is a risk in not having systems that can effectively and efficiently share data.
I think the visualization that comes in my mind often is traveling overseas and seeing a bunch of strings to do electrical wire between houses, and they're all kind of put together. And when we don't create an organized system, that's how data sharing happens. And that's at risk for burning down and fire and other risk, versus if we put the infrastructure in to safely and securely sharing information and know when it's turned off and turned on and being able to monitor what that looks like. Less risk of fire, less risk of problems going down, more efficient transfer of, you know, in that case, energy, and in this case, information. So, you know, I always think of that model as I'm trying to like fax papers back and forth. And I'm like, oh, we're just stringing some wires along again here instead of building the infrastructure to make sure that we can securely do this in a way that's efficient as a whole. So I appreciate that analogy.
Yeah, absolutely. When you said the fax, I was, when I came into this job, I just was amazed. I fax is still used, but the extent that it is still used in healthcare is just mind-boggling to me. And it's not just, you know, the poor old fax machine technology. Like, it's not just about that, but the human hours that get spent standing at fax machines and requesting faxes, those are the kinds of things that also just drive up care. And when we look at workforce shortages, all those kinds of things, it's just like, this shouldn't happen. So yeah, the fax machine has been an interesting thing for me to think entirely differently about as I have been in this role.
And like, when you receive data out of a fax machine, that's not particularly readable data. It's, you know, if you're digitizing it, you're often scanning it in, like, and that's, you know, then, you know, that's a ream of information. And as a busy provider, you know, in an emergency department, do you always have the time to read through that fax to find that nugget, to find that, you know, past piece of care information or medication that someone is on that's relevant to the decision that you need to make right now? And so I think part of why thinking about kind of and digital and kind of thinking about the technical innovations that we have is that the HIE can help us facilitate the movement of data in ways that are much more kind of interoperable. And then thinking about like, how do we use that? Is we don't just want to move it. We also want to transform it and ensure that that really is useful. And I think that that's where like the 7 best practices that came out of Washington is, I mean, the number one best practice was like ensure that there is a, you know, infrastructure to exchange information between EDs. And then the other recommendations that come out of that are a lot about kind of patient or provider education and care coordination and ensuring notifications. And that's all built on that foundational infrastructure of how we exchange information. And so I think that's what, you know, excites me and like why I appreciate getting to work with Kendra is that because we have this technical infrastructure in place, there are so many opportunities to think about, you know, what notifications are we directing to providers to say, you know, this event happened or this person showed up in the ED, and making sure that that information does come back to their primary care doc. So the next time they walk in, that primary care doc is able to have a little bit more, you know, full conversation about what happened and ensure that, you know, that person doesn't just feel like they got left in the dark. And so, you know, it's really making sure that information doesn't just move, but it is used.
I appreciate some of those examples. And, you know, I just really want to, again, invite Alaskans to join the conversation. I think most of us have had some experience one way or another where you went into a provider office and they didn't know that you were recently in the emergency department, didn't know which meds you took, or you went to the emergency department, or you're just paying your bill and you're wondering why it's so expensive and you're trying to figure out this space. So I'd love to hear questions and concerns. I also want to point people to the show notes once they're posted. You'll be able to see a bunch of links that we've been able to include, but the HIE Health Connect has I think, a really good website with a bunch of really simple questions and answers that I oftentimes hear for patients and would direct people that direction to take a look. Kendra, I don't know if you want to just talk about that for a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. So healthyconnectak.org is our website, and there's a FAQ section on there, and we try to, you know, have things that are common questions about, like, how is my data shared? Who can see it? How can I, what does this mean for me? How can I opt out if I don't want my data shared? Those types of things. So that's definitely on our website, and really invite people to look at that. I think a lot of the work we do is around helping providers and organizations use the data, but at the heart is patients, it's people, it's individual Alaskans. And I think that's anytime, you know, we're kind of in a like situation, how do we approach this? How do we look at it? It's really about how does it benefit an individual human Alaskan and their healthcare? And that's what the Health Information Exchange is about. And it's what I like about it. The technology is a tool that gets it done, but it's really about how does it make sense for Alaskans? So yeah, those FAQs on the website, we have some different resources there. If people are really interested, we have a summit coming up in August that people are invited to. So happy to engage in a variety of ways.
Great. And so for listeners, you're listening to Alaska. This is Dr. Ann Zink, and you are on Line 1, your health connection. Encourage you to call in. We'll provide more information numbers after this quick break.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Start your day with a quick look at the most important stories from around the state with Alaska Morning News, your dose of headlines each weekday morning. With reporters covering every corner of Alaska, you can be sure you're up to date on the stories that matter to Alaskans. Join me, Ava White, for Alaska Morning News weekdays on your local public radio station.
Local sponsors do right by their business and for the community by supporting public media stations. Thank you for considering adding your corporate support. You'll be in good company.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Ann Zink, and you have joined me and my guests, Eliza Ramsey and Kendra Sitka, on Line 1, Your Health Connection. We're talking about data, data sharing, health data, health costs. Have you ever gone to a clinic and learned that they didn't have your labs, your images, your medication, didn't know that you had recently been seen, and so you had to get repeat tests or recite everything from memory? How did this hiccup affect your care? Curious about what your thoughts are on data sharing across the state of Alaska? You can join our conversation at 907-550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And you can always email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So Kendra, we were talking a little bit just about the questions that people have being able to look at that lab results. Can you talk a little bit beyond lab results and discharge summaries, what additional data streams, thinking about image files, medical history that might be on the HIE, kind of help us understand that data space?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I really kind of the things you mentioned, those core medical history pieces, it won't be every single piece of every data, but really some of those key clinical notes. Some of it depends what the providing organization sends to the HIE. So organizations have options. And I think that's important as well, that they can choose what they send based on their organization type and what makes sense. But really in the best situation, there's those dictated clinical notes. So for example, when you go to the doctor and you get a summary of your visit, that would exist in the HIE. A discharge summary, if you came out of the hospital or out of care from somewhere, all your lab data, comprehensive medication data, problem lists, so diagnoses, those types of things, radiology reports. At this point, we don't have images themselves, kind of exploring that, but really a lot of times the radiology report of what it says is what often people want to look at, so that's there. So all of those types of things. And I think what's really critical and the value of the HIE is this pulls it all together from different places. So if I have some lab tests at one place and I have lab tests in another place, it pulls it all together in one place. Eliza spoke to this earlier, but really the value is having it be in a consolidated, easy to read spot for the provider so that you aren't, as a provider, you're not looking at labs from seven different places. You see all those labs in one place. So all of those things exist within the HIE depending on, you know, which organizations are contributing data.
Super helpful. Kind of actually gets into a question that I think we have from Jeff. Jeff, from Anchorage, you're on Line 1, your health connection. Jeff, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
We got you.
Yes, I have a number of healthcare providers. How do I find out which ones participate in the network? And if they don't, how do I help convince them to participate? I think this is an awesome development.
Jeff, so thanks so much for your question. I'll turn that over to Kendra.
That's a great question. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. On our website, healthyconnectak.org, there is a networks link that has a list of all the organizations that send us data. We recently updated this in a way that might not make sense to everybody. We're balancing whether it's helpful or not helpful, but you'll see little check boxes in different columns in terms of the type of data that they send. So really, not everyone's going to probably look at all those types of data and know what that means, but essentially it will give you a sense of if they send a lot of different types of data or a little bit of data. So that's a great place to look. And if you don't see your provider organization on there, you can always ask them if they are interested in participating and connecting to the HIE. And then we have a section that's on that website as well. That's what we call National Network Connections. That's basically those organizations aren't sending us direct data, but we have a connection to a data sort of data repository that they do participate in, but that is a little bit less robust there. And so that the section that really lines out what organizations are sending data directly to us is really, I think, how we drive the largest value of the HIE in the state. So thanks for the question, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff, I just really want to like pause on your question and highlight it as well, because I think sometimes in this policy space, we make statute, we hope it really serves patients, and there's these organizations that you know are working hard to do it. But at the same time, you got your clinic who's worried about keeping the doors open and moving forward. It's hard to keep track of, you know, what is the HIE, what is happening. And the middle of it is you, Jeff, a patient who has a bunch of providers and wanting to make sure that your information is shared. I oftentimes say to have really good movement in healthcare, you need to have patients involved, providers involved, policymakers involved, the public involved, and honestly, press or people having communication, which is here. And so, Jeff, just you asking that question, I think can go a really long way oftentimes for your clinic, your providers to know that that is important to you, that your information is shared and that we can help bring down healthcare costs, that you can have your wishes known, your medication shared, your images known. And I think when that is driven by patients, it really changes the conversation than when it is this, you know, IT thing over there that people don't necessarily understand that is asking to kind of share data. And I think, as Kendra's been mentioning, really that patient-centric is huge. Eliza, you know, I want to pull you in here as well, because I think you think both about systems as well as individual patients. Help us think about this a little bit more from a patient perspective, as well as kind of all the way up through the systems. What do you think some of those barriers are through data sharing? Is it just knowledge and information? Is it technology? Help us understand how come this isn't already the case?
I think it's a really complex space, and I think it's a lot about participatory. And so I really appreciate, you know, the question from Jeff. Think about, you know, how as an individual can he support, you know, the places that he gets care in participating and access this. There is a lot of kind of laws and statute. I think the one thing that hasn't come up yet in this conversation that I do exist in a lot is thinking about HIPAA, and that's kind of the responsibility to protect patient information. But the P in HIPAA is for portability. And so it's ensuring that when patients move around, you know, they can get care when and where they need to get it, and that their information can get care when and where they need to get. And especially thinking about the Alaska care context, we have folks from all over the state who are moving around to get care. And whether that's out in a rural community, coming into Anchorage, whether that's going down to the lower 48, thinking about movement is really critical in order to ensuring that, you know, folks get high quality care, and that, you know, the information about what they might have received in a different location follows them back to wherever they reside. And so I think we're in a moment where the technical like capability is really kind of starting to be there, and it's really available. And there are definitely spaces where we need to invest in ensuring that, so some of the smaller clinics who might not have the most robust electronic health record system are still able to participate in this system. And what I think was really great about the HIE is there's both kind of some of those kind of automated data connections that Kendra talked about, but there's also the ability for a provider to just have kind of a portal lookup where they're able to log in. And so we don't need to invest as much in the technical connection, and it's more just kind of connecting the provider to that resource. I think it comes down a lot to governance and to knowledge and to trust. And I think that is some of the stuff that takes a little bit more time and a little bit more investment and doesn't happen accidentally. And so I think it really does take all of our investment and participation in the space.
You know, I think it's really interesting to think about both the individual level, but also the systems level. I think one of the best examples I had heard recently was a pediatric office who was using the HIE to understand if the kiddos that they were serving were going to the emergency department on a regular basis. And if they were going on a frequent basis, instead of scheduling a shorter appointment, they just scheduled a longer appointment. For some reason, this kiddo and this family was going a lot. And maybe housing was more of an issue. Maybe the kid's asthma was really poorly controlled. Maybe there was a divorce recently in the family and there was like not as much communication between the parents. Like there could be so many different things that were impacting that child's health. And so they were able to use kind of these system level awarenesses via the HIE and how this child was accessing care to be able to better provide better primary care and prevention to moving upstream. So anything from individual care to moving forward.
Well, and the information can move pretty instantaneously, and we have a level of connectivity across Alaska that we didn't 10 years ago. And so in your last kind of Line 1 episode with the community health workers from Eastern Aleutians, they're talking about waiting hours to days for transportation to get out to kind of evac a patient that might need to come into Anchorage or elsewhere for care. Information can get there now. And I think that's part of one of the strengths of the HIE is that kind of that repository has already been created. And so we don't have to call or fax or chase down that information. We can look it up like in a very timely way. And that also it can be a resource to, you know, that community health worker out in the Eastern Aleutians, but it also could be a resource to the on-call provider, you know, who's here in Anchorage, who's consulting on that. And so that's kind of the emergency scenario, but also on the daily scenario, like how can we facilitate telehealth in communities so folks don't even have to travel for care?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the state is so large in the movement overall. So I think thinking about that component, help us think, Eliza, a little bit more about like the systems of care, like, you know, applying different resources or thinking about like kind of the Medicaid. How do you guys think about kind of these larger awarenesses of data to think about systems of care as a whole?
So, I mean, I think this comes back to the Department of Health major arcs of effort right now, and all of them have a component of data to them. One of them is thinking about how do we prevent, you know, unnecessary deaths, particularly thinking about overdose and suicide. Kendra and I and partners at the Department of Commerce and Economic Development are collaborating with the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, which is kind of another database that supports providers in their ability to deliver appropriate care. And we want to make sure that information from the HIE is also available in the PDMP. So when providers are making choices about prescribing scheduled narcotics, they're able to see information that can be clinically relevant to that. And it can help them have a more informed conversation with that person who might be at risk of an overdose. And so, like, we want to prevent more overdoses in Alaska. We're also thinking about strengthening the behavioral health system. And, you know, how do we engage different types of care providers in order to provide the care that is when and where it is needed and necessary to those behavioral health providers? And then also integrating behavioral health into kind of what's more traditionally clinical spaces and kind of breaking down those silos between like behavioral and medical care. And then last is just thinking about how do we pay for Medicaid? You know, we are a large payer in the state and also determine, you know, how folks move around and receive care and ensuring that like the care that we're paying for Medicaid is really high quality care that patients need.
Before I go into a couple questions that we're getting in, would you just define what the PDMP is and speak without it, tell the audience what that is?
It's the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, and it is a database that providers who are prescribing certain scheduled substances, thinking kind of primarily about opioids, are required to log into and review other prescriber like prescriptions that that individual has received to kind of understand, you know, are they maybe being overprescribed or, you know, is there kind of conflicting prescriptions or from multiple providers. And so it's another data system that folks log into and ensuring. And so and that is one that all prescribers are legally required in the state of Alaska to go look up anytime they are kind of writing that prescription. And so ensuring that, you know, if folks have to go look in that place, ensuring that there is really relevant, helpful information in that data system.
Appreciate you highlighting another statute kind of talking about data and data sharing that has also decreased opioid overdose deaths just by that awareness. There's a question here that I just wanted to highlight from Rich from Juneau. He says, every single time I question providers about the system and how my taxes are used, I'm told it's because of security. Using a 100-year-old analog system for security seems rather foolish. There's far superior data encryption systems that could allow faster, more efficient, searchable patient data transfer. I once got an MRI and was told the quickest way to get it for my provider was to burn the data to a disk and carry it across town. And Rich, I tell my patients that all the time, even though this is a huge interest and passion of mine. So I appreciate that question. Any thoughts or comments on that? And then I'm going to turn to our call.
I mean, like, you know, Kendra was sharing one of her anecdotes. One of my experiences is I had a stress fracture and was like learning how to be on crutches and was trying to transfer care from my hometown to where I was going to school at the time, and was like literally mazing my way through the basement of this medical practice trying to find the medical records office so they could give me a CD. It just like, it doesn't have to be this way. And so I'm hardly in this work like out of self-interest. Like, I want it to be better for me. I want it to be better for my loved ones. And yeah, it, like, there are a lot of technological possibilities that could make this better for all of us.
Oh man, Eliza Crutcher through the basement office. So we're going to go ahead and move to the next caller. We have Martin from Fairbanks. Martin, you're on line one, your health connection. Your health, go ahead.
It's a bit related to the last question, but all of your questions, but I'd like to preface this by saying I'm a retired healthcare provider. I retired entirely in 2018, but during my career, let me preface this by saying a couple of years ago, I was medically evacuated. I had a surgical emergency, and I ended up being evacuated all the way to Salt Lake City, and because they couldn't find a specialist even in Seattle to perform the procedure I needed, but everything came out okay. And I assume there was a very large amount of communication between hospitals for that occasion, and I'm grateful for it. But my bigger question is, during my career, I can't remember the year that HIPAA became law. And all of your comments and explanations seem to revolve around HIPAA. I remember when HIPAA happened, it was very confusing for the first 2 or 3, 4 years. And it has really, it was almost like, you know, when the Berlin Wall came down, it was like in healthcare. And to be honest, you know, I'm retired and I'm older, and I don't care who knows about my healthcare. How about just making, you know, people that have a healthcare system that they sign into having a witnessed legal statement saying they waive HIPAA? HIPAA has, in my regard for healthcare delivery, has been an obstacle rather than, you know, helpful. I don't think most people really care. There are a few embarrassing situations where people might prefer to have their health information withheld, but nonetheless, I think most people really don't care, and if it will speed their care, especially in emergencies, they'd be all for it, even if it requires a witness statement. I'll hang up and ask for your opinion.
Martin, I so appreciate your question. And, you know, you just really highlight as a healthcare provider how much, you know, it can be confusing. And I have the same experience myself where I'm like, oh, I thought that should be transferred and it's not actually there. And the interpretation of HIPAA and the ways that it does or doesn't work. You know, I'm curious, Kendra, Eliza, you know, what are your thoughts on HIPAA and how much is that helpful? How much is it hurt sharing data? How much it is just misunderstanding? What do you think?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question, Martin. I appreciate it. And the question prior also, it's interesting because exactly what you articulated, that most of the time what I hear from individual humans, Alaskans, patients, they would like more exposure of their data rather than less in many cases. Now, I absolutely think we have to have systems that allow everyone to have control of their own data. But I think sometimes HIPAA it's there for a reason, but I think data is more restricted than HIPAA even requires in most cases because people are nervous about data sharing, so they're overly conservative, and data doesn't get shared where it legally could be shared, and that can be harmful and frustrating to patients. And so I think, Martin, I hear you 100%, and I think that's what we hear often from patients, and again, patients is probably not even the good word, just individual humans and Alaskans. And I think as our organization, as a nonprofit here for the state, that's what we need to hear. And that's how we need to think about how we move things forward and systems forward. In terms of the question prior to on cost issues and, you know, the reasoning given is privacy and security. I think we have very secure systems that often where I see the cost coming in, it is multiple systems on top of other multiple systems. And so it's mind-boggling what small, and Eliza mentioned some of the small organizations, small healthcare providers that have, you know, not as much resources as large systems, they are paying a tremendous amount of information, not to the Health Information Exchange to share, but maybe from their EMR. So really, how do we move towards more standardization of systems and things that decrease the cost of every different data connection? But I think that's where something like the HIE is really critical in having an opportunity to streamline those data connections, because every one of those data connections costs money. So if we can have connection to one hub where people go to, that can start to reduce the cost. And I think that's really the intention of a state-designated health information exchange, that it reduces all of the separate connections to different entities.
Yeah, I appreciate you highlighting that component. Eliza, what are your thoughts on HIPAA in this space?
I agree with Kendra that I think that, I mean, HIPAA is the law of the land, and like, it is our responsibility to follow it and to recognize that it was put in place to kind of ensure patients, you know, patient data is appropriately protected. It went into effect in 1996. And so I think also, if we think about the change in technology in that span, it is challenging to think about how do we adapt this to kind of the landscape that we have today. But I agree with Kendra that I think that there are a lot of opportunities to legally and appropriately move data under HIPAA that we're not taking kind of full advantage of. Because, I mean, for treatment, payment, care coordination, public health are allowable uses under HIPAA. And so, you know, and those are kind of the functions of, you know, the allowable functions under the HIE. And so I do think that there is a lot of opportunity within existing kind of law to keep moving kind of our data exchange and data sharing capabilities forward. I also do think there's some really big kind of generational and attitudinal changes about, you know, the expectation that like patients do want their data to be shared. I mean, I think, you know, you've shared stories, you know, as an ED physician of that you're like, don't you know what I'm on? And you're like, I'm not sure what, you know. And so patients have this expectation that this information is available to their providers, and it's kind of it's working to match that expectation with reality.
I love that. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. This is Dr. Ann Zink, and you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. And afterwards, we'll talk a little bit more about the HIE data and data security.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
For more than four decades, Alaska News Nightly has brought you award-winning statewide news. From Dutch Harbor to Prudhoe Bay, from Metlakatla to Koktovik, Alaska News Nightly covers every corner of Alaska, keeping you up to date about the issues you care about most. Join me, Casey Grove, for Alaska News Nightly, weeknights on your local public radio station.
The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Is that the College of Health?
Great. This is Dr. Ann Zink. You are here on Line One, Your Health Connection. We're talking about data and data sharing, and really excited to have our guests, Kendra Sitka, as well as Eliza Ramsey, here to be talking about what we know about data, the HIE, and data sharing as a whole. I wanted to go ahead and turn to kind of security and safety. We have another email here from Larry in Ketchikan, and he says, how is systems protected from federal systems like DOGE? So I'd love to hear a little bit about like the connection between like individual providers, the HIE, state government, local government, federal government. I think there's a lot of silos, and sometimes very appropriately so, compared to what's happening at the federal. So maybe Eliza, we'll start with you kind of thinking from the state perspective, state sharing with federal agencies, how that data sharing goes, and then Kendra will turn to you.
So the State Department of Health does share data with CDC for certain kind of purposes of thinking about, you know, connecting like Alaska public health context to national public health context. We don't share personally identifiable information. And so I think that's another kind of layer of this data sharing conversation that we haven't talked about as much, is there's many kind of like types of data in terms of, you know, how much can you tell that this is really like data about Eliza versus data about, you know, a person in Alaska. And so the CDC doesn't, for the most part, like does not receive kind of personally identifiable information about me. You know, if I have a notifiable condition, if I, you know, when like end up with COVID, like my data contributes to the kind of the counts and the cases that we send to CDC. So then CDC can like compare case rates or compare vaccination rates across different states. And so there are, you know, there are barriers in some cases to data sharing and thinking about what is that like authority and that need to know. And that's where like it is appropriate and necessary that the state does not have access to all of the information that's in the HIE. You know, it's, you know, where there are specific and kind of appropriate authorities to access that. And I think that that, you know, we are in a moment of thinking about kind of security and different authorities and different relationships. And so it takes, you know, it takes strong relationships and thoughtful partnerships. Kendra?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And it's such a, you know, prime time to be thinking about where, you know, state boundaries come in, where do federal boundaries come in, where does privacy come in, all of those pieces. So I think it's a great time to really be thinking about that. And I mean, I think Eliza hit on the key points there. One thing that I really appreciate how Alaska has set up the Health Information Exchange is that we are a separate nonprofit. So while we have, I think, a very collaborative relationship with the state and we support the state's work, we are an independent nonprofit. And that's not the case in all states, how they have their HIE set up. And I think the value of that is that, for example, the data in our Health Information Exchange does not have any, you know, the federal government does not have a right to that data. Neither does the state government directly. They have the right to the data that they haven't authorized reason to see, which I think is an excellent way to do it. And again, it's not that, I mean, we have a great partnership with the state, but it keeps that separate. It keeps the data separate so that we really have the responsibility to make sure that it's only getting to people with an authorized use. And that's not the federal government. And I think it's also an interesting as we think about different types of data sharing. And one of the callers called in about, you know, seeking care across states and how does data get shared across states. And certainly an area that I think is more and more being looked at and recognized, we want that to happen smoothly. As Alaskans, we know sometimes you have to go out of state for care. On the other hand, we want to be very mindful that we retain what we want as a state, our data sharing system to be. So I think a huge part for us is being a separate nonprofit entity, I think is a critical, I think it's a great model to have.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And we actually got another email from Deborah asking a very similar question along those lines. You know, a couple other ways that I think about it and curious on your guys' thoughts and response to there. You know, there is the information that is needed for payment and billing, and the federal government is a fairly large payer of healthcare when you think of Medicaid, Medicare, as well as VA and DOD. So they'll have a lot more data on a federal perspective on those sorts of federal types where they're paying claims to look at what type of what we call ICD-10 codes or diagnosis codes were paid. The data tends to be a little bit late, but they can like look and get much more detailed information in that sense. But that's very different than an HIE that might be just sharing like how many patients are showing up to the emergency department with this type of information. But it doesn't say that Kendra showed up to that type of information if that wasn't information that was chosen to be shared. And that information, like as you mentioned, from the HIE can't be shared with the state or the federal government unless there's a need for it that is explicitly said. So if I want to know if Kendra showed up to the emergency department as a chief medical officer when I was in that role, I couldn't see that. There was no, you know, I got asked a lot, like, I'll just do the same HIPAA form and then I could see the data you can see. And I'm like, I can't see any of that data because it's illegal for me to see that data. What I can see is trends because I can see population health for kind of the specific HIPAA sharing purposes, but I can't share, see even when I was at the state, individual health data. So I think that de-identified data, identified data are really kind of separate in that space in the ways that we think about it. And then claims data, when you're having to pay for something, if you have an insurer, they can see a lot more information about you. And if that is Medicaid, if that's Medicare, or if that's Premier Blue Cross, because they are paying for specific claims, than saying your provider down the street, who theoretically should see it from a you know, provider perspective, but that's where I think the information sharing really gets lost. What am I missing in that kind of breaking down of information or data silos that you guys would highlight? They're looking at each other very thoughtfully at the moment.
I mean, I think the other like important part of thinking about the HIE is that it is serving, you know, multiple functions. Like payers are a part, both private and public payers are participants in the HIE, and it's useful to them. And so, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of that clinical benefit, that benefit to kind of individual care coordination, but it there, you know, that participation is there from the payers and thinking about how do we make this information ensure that, like, I mean, so payers both have a responsibility to ensure that the care that they're paying for is high quality and like the necessary care that individual receives. But then they can also think about kind of the whole population of what they are supporting financially. You know, is that where the resources need to be going? And so that is one of the strengths of the HIE is that like it is meeting a lot of those different functionalities.
I think another thing I really think about the HIE is it really doesn't give any entity different access to data than they already have a legal reason to see. It gives them easier and quicker access and more, you know, data in a more organized way. So as Eliza mentioned, thinking about what we think is of population health data. So that population doesn't necessarily mean the population of Alaska or South Central Alaska, but for example, a physician practice, their patients that they serve is their population of patients. And being able to look across that and say, wow, of all the patients I see, I have a disproportionate number of patients that have X condition, hypertension, diabetes, whatever it is, more than I would expect. What's happening with my patients in general that maybe I as a practitioner could think about our practice and how we're serving them? Should we do a different education program? Should we do different screening? So that's really powerful in terms of just improving care. And that's looking across data sources. So all of that data would be something they would have access to anyway. But by having it come to the HIE, they're not relying on only if their patient got diagnosed with hypertension in their practice, but maybe it was picked up in a different practice they were in that's also contributing data to the HIE. So that's where I think it really is important to recognize that it's not different information. And the same with payers. They do have access to a lot of information. When someone is paying for our healthcare, they're going to have a lot of information about us. So it's not providing them anything different, but it's providing it in a way that perhaps they can work through prior authorization more quickly, or, you know, those types of things that can be very frustrating processes when the data is slow to move.
I appreciate that description. It's not anything new. It's just making it easier or more effectual. You know, there's a great question coming in from Mary Ann about kind of a little bit where the rubber meets the road and how this actually works in Alaska. So I'm just going to read it. Mary Ann says, I'm in Fairbanks. The last 5 years, I've had more medical problems and seen more providers. And I'm sorry to hear that, Mary Ann. I don't understand from your conversation whether the system's up and running. And if so, who's included, patients or providers? Does the HIE include state vaccine data? I found that the system is hard to navigate. And my pharmacist said the same thing. Have clinics and providers in Fairbanks, opted in? If not, is there a cost to providers who opt in? I've been to the Mayo Clinic and love the data system there. Every lab and every office visit, the system's immediately uploaded into my account. I can see it on my app on my phone, and the next provider also has that information. Kendra.
That is a great question and lots of layers. So I'm going to try and remember the various pieces. So there are organizations in Fairbanks who participate in the Health Information Exchange. I think we are at a place, I would say, in the last 3 years or so, really getting better data contribution to the HIE. So I think we're not where we want to be fully. So I'm very full transparency there. I think we're starting to be at a really good place. So things like a Health Information Exchange are very much a chicken egg situation. You have to have enough data there to make it useful to look at, but you need somebody to be the first to start to contribute data. That took a while, I think, to get up and running in our state. So places in Fairbanks are there. I think what we are really working on is then the utilization, because I don't think providers and organizations are pulling data out and referencing it as frequently as they could be that would add value. So I think that's something we as the HIE are really working on education around. I think your comment about going to Mayo and other health systems, I know when my daughter was young, we did some things at Seattle Children's and I was like, this is amazing. This just everything flows. And I think it's this balance. In Alaska, we tend to have very separate health systems. So we have fee-for-service systems. We don't have MCOs. We have private providers. And as Alaskans, we tend to love that. Like we like those independent physician offices. The challenge with that is then there's not one system. So people have to rally around some sort of connected system like the HIE. And so I think we're building that. I absolutely hear you that it is not perfect. We are not 100% there. And I think that's where, though, as a state, looking at this together, that's what allows us to keep our independent practices and our independence that we love as Alaskans, but also have a connected system that allows people to have the information they need when they need it.
Appreciate that. Eliza, I also, she mentioned vaccine. So curious on kind of vaccine sharing and thoughts there.
So we do have some vaccine data going into the HIE, but it's not all right now. And was actually on a meeting yesterday thinking about kind of what are the kind of the strategies going forward to think about how can we get more vaccine data in there. You know, I think that is a really critical kind of data source that the Department of Health does kind of steward and manage that has a lot of clinical relevance. And in thinking about kind of that provider experience of like it's another system that they have to log into. So we're working on it. We hear you, we're working on it. And then I also think there's an opportunity for to leverage the HIE to get reporting from those folks who are delivering vaccinators back to the Department of Health. And kind of as Kendra talked about, it's not another data connection, but it's kind of leveraging that infrastructure that's already there. So definitely more opportunities to think about kind of that bidirectional movement of data. I think Kendra really spoke to that. There's definitely opportunities for more participation and more utilization that, you know, if you have ideas or requests or opportunities that you think that could make the HIE stronger, we're all ears.
Yeah, I appreciate you highlighting the fact this is really kind of a public driven. It's a not-for-profit. It's here to serve patients in Alaska and moving forward. And, you know, Marianne's comment really talks about a single system like Mayo. And Kendra, I really appreciate you highlighted the independence and the diversity of our healthcare landscape here in Alaska, and it provides real opportunities but real challenges sometimes in that data connection, and so, you know, there's ways that we're trying to figure out through those things while we're really preserving that independence, including the data sharing. You know, we just have a few minutes left, and I really want to kind of turn back to the patient and thinking about what ways patients can be involved, Alaskans can be involved to improve their data and data information systems. I hate to go back to, like, carrying that MRI on the disc, but, you know, knowing which meds that you have, being able to have that, being able to put together, like, a pulse form saying what your end-of-life care. But Kendra and Eliza, help us kind of think about what things would you tell patients, if it's talking to their provider, if it is going to the website, engaging in policy, what things do you want to encourage Alaskans to do if they really care about health data, data sharing, data security, and kind of moving forward? So,
yeah, I could start. I think all of the things you mentioned are great. So one thing I think going forward, we should not have to carry around MRI discs and med lists. So absolutely not accepting that that's forever. For now, you might have to. But I think talking to your providers about what you want with data sharing, and we've talked a lot about this, and a number of callers have brought it out, that patients want their data to move. And so I think it's important for providers to know that so they can advocate for that for patients as much as they're advocating for protection of data in the right way, but making sure it moves. And then accuracy of your data. I think the better and more sophisticated we get with data moving and moving from one place to another, verify that your data is right, because the better it moves and gets to another place, if there's an error, it's going to perpetuate much more quickly. So I think those are things. Let your provider know what you want, and then continue to verify accuracy, so as we have better data systems, the right data gets to the right place.
Ah, that's great. I appreciate that. Eliza, what are your thoughts?
I have one example that's not specific to the HIE, but the Department of Health makes available an app called Docket, which allows an individual to download their vaccine record. And rather than having a piece of paper or me calling my mom to be like, did I get this vaccine as a kiddo? It's a way that you can have it integrated on your phone. And I think, you know, in addition to kind of voice, like, you know, we live on our phones. And so having the opportunity to have our healthcare experience integrated and available on our phones is really important. And so I think downloading Docket, we'll put the link in the show notes, but that's something you can do today that, you know, you can have access to your vaccine record right there.
Yeah, Docket's fun and amazing in that space. I love the kind of line that's in there. It's something about, like, your health in your hands and making sure that you have your health data in your hands. I also just wanted to highlight, you know, I really appreciate it when patients are hoping to a place where this is no longer the need, but it's been really revolutionary in the just last year or two. Now that there is statute requiring patients to being able to have access to their data, how often in an emergency department someone will tell me, oh, I had an MRI recently. And while I can't see the MRI, I can read the report when they pull it up on their phone. And so while I would love to have that integrated into the system so I could just see it right there, I just really appreciate when patients are able to have that information in their hands. And that's an example of where policy resulted in changes that were required for health information to make sure that you had your information. You know, and while Docket wasn't required by any statute, it was a great effort by the Department of Health to try to make sure that your health information was in your hands, so that when you come into the emergency department, I just don't, you know, have to ask you if you had your tetanus. You can check to see if you had your tetanus, because I can't see if you've had your tetanus. And so that way we can be on the same page and make sure that they're there. So I really appreciate those questions as a whole. You know, any last words that you guys want to close out in thinking to Alaskans? You've given some great examples for patients. I've loved the kind of description. If you were, you know, queens for the day, if you could have one thing that your kind of hope and vision for health data information sharing would look like, what would you share?
Oh, this is a great question. I think it's more participation and awareness. Like, one of the things that we have not gotten anywhere near in this conversation is thinking about AI and different kind of digital opportunities. And, like, we're in a rapidly changing kind of digital and technical landscape. And so we need participation. We need people to think thoughtfully about kind of how they show up and what they want for their data.
And so we're going to wrap it up there. That was a great summary, Eliza. You've been listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. Again, feel free to check out the show notes. And I really want to thank our producer, Madeline Rose, for all of her help in organizing this. And Chris High, the amazing sound engineer, keeping us all up and running. But most importantly, our guest, Kendra Sitka and Eliza Ramsey, for joining us today on Line One, Your Health Connection, and encourage your participation.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Schumigan Corporation. Located in Sand Point, the Schumigan family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sand Point Tavern, the Anchor Inn Motel, and the Anchor Inn Lounge. The Schumigan Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sand Point, on the web at www.schumigan.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Schumigan Corporation. Hometown Values and Service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sand Point, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay,